air work, why every once in a while, experienced pilots need to spend some time in the gym. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. You can find it online at overtheairwaves.com. We get together on Mondays to talk about safety issues and try to make them timely. First of all, welcome in.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure being with you.
You have an article in the November issue of Over the Airwaves called Airwork. You're launching a new series in your newsletter, it says, devoted to a review of the fundamentals of flight. Why do we need to review these fundamentals?
The fundamentals are something that a competent flight instructor will always return a student to or a veteran pilot to whenever he or she observes some shortcoming in basic airmanship skills. For example, teaching instruments. If we find that our customer is having difficulty keeping the needle centered on an ILS, going back to the basics would be to have them doing some basic instrument attitude flying, which is a form of air work for the instrument pilot. For the non-instrument pilot, or for all of us for that matter, becoming good at the basics is something that will prevent us from more serious involvements, accidents that relate from a failure to know the basics. I mentioned in the article a reference to an interview I had with a year or so ago with Dick Van Grunsven of Van's Aircraft, and I asked him. I said, Van, what is the number one shortcoming that you see among your pilot customers? And without hesitation, he offered up immediately their inability to operate safely in a slow flight attitude.
He's an interesting guy to talk to about that, because a lot of the Van's planes are intentionally designed to be somewhat close to neutral stability, and yet they have very reasonable low stall speeds. You may need to be a little bit sharper to land that than you would the generic training aircraft that kind of flies like a minivan.
Well, yes, and at slow speeds is when the airplane is acting in probably the least predictable fashion. As Van said, taking off, what we typically do after we receive our private pilot certificate is we drive out to the airport, we get in the airplane, we drive it to the active runway, we drive it down the runway, we drive it into the sky, drive it through cruise, drive it down, drive it to the tie-down area, and drive ourselves home. And we never return to practice of the basics after we have received our private pilot certificate. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to put this series on air work, to bring us back to the basics. We suffer in the United States, as you know, one fatal stall spin accident a week. That's over 50 fatal stall spin accidents a year in the United States. And the only way we can get into a stall is through slow flight. Obviously, there are other ways we can get into a stall, but most typically, it's a result of a pitch attitude that is necessary to maintain while flying slowly. And when that pitch attitude reaches what we call the critical angle, the airplane stalls. And if it's in a turn and it's not properly coordinated, it'll quickly turn into a yawed stall or a turning stall, or most translated, a spin. And this is something that is so easily avoidable. If we learn to feel through our body, our somatic graphic feelings, exactly what an impending stall feels like, and this can be achieved through lots of repetitive practice in slow flight.
Let's talk briefly about what slow flight is technically. You'd say the most widely accepted definition is maneuvering at the slowest airspeed at which the airplane is capable of maintaining controlled flight without indications of a stall, usually 3 to 5 knots above stalling speed. Where do we do this, Bob? Where do we practice this sort of thing?
Well, the standard answer to that is out in the practice area. This is a part of aviation or general aviation instruction that I categorically opposed to, going out into a practice area, so to speak, and artificially simulating what these conditions are. I think they can slow flight can be practiced in any phase of flight, and always on a cross country flight going from point A to point B. And as flight instructors, we can create scenarios which will enable us to impart a real sense of what slow flight is all about. I always have a camera for example, in my flight bag as a flight instructor. And this works usually the first time, sometimes the second time with a student, a primary student. We'll be chugging along at 3,500 feet, and we'll pass over a unique target that I'll say to the student, now, I'd like to get a picture of this if you don't mind. I'll pull out my camera and I'll say, now, I'd like you to just hold this altitude for me, 3,500 feet or 3,000 or whatever it is, but I want you to slow down the airplane so I can grab a photo of this particular object or building. And, okay, they'll say, and they crank it back, and then I'll have them, can you give me a turn here while I zoom in a little bit low? And, of course, I have one eye on the camera and both arms spring-loaded to deal with the controls for what inevitably might happen when the student does this improperly. And I'll keep saying, slower, please, slower, and no, hold this altitude for me. And they're so intent on making me happy trying to take the photo that the airplane stalls. And I said, what happened? And it becomes a learning object that is something that they simply will not forget. So learning to fly slow in the practice area is one thing, but having them actually experience slow flight as a part of a larger scenario is something they'll never forget.
That's interesting too, Bob, because in the typical practice area environment, you're sitting there with an instructor telling you he wants you to pull it back and, you know, lose airspeed, and either it's going to be power on or power off, and he's going to be talking to you about what the signs will be and listening for the little horn and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the ones that bite us are the ones that happen when we're flying our families home after a long day from somewhere, or the things that are not in a training environment. So it seems to me like you've arrived at a much better simulation of when things like that are really likely to happen.
I was just reviewing with a CFI candidate today something that we instructors know but have long since forgotten, many of us. And this is these principles of learning where there's levels of learning. We call it rote. We call it understanding. We call it application. And finally, correlation. So much of the teaching that we do, so much of the learning that we do, as particularly as primary pilots, is rote learning.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we memorize. We memorize how to fly the airplane slow, and we never get it beyond the understanding, application, or correlation, which is the highest level of learning that says, okay, I now can correlate the problem of remaining over a site that I'm trying to take pictures of, or a passenger taking pictures, concentrating on doing that, and then innately knowing that if I do this to his satisfaction, I'm going to wind up flying too slow, and then I'm going to get into a problem. So as we'll talk about after the break, this is something that we need to do. We need to do it regularly, and there are certain training objectives and elements that should be included when we practice this or any other training maneuver.
All right, Bob, we've got you trained well. We need to take that break. We'll do it now. Back in a moment. Bob Miller is my guest of Over the Airwaves. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves talking about slow flight. And Bob, we've identified what slow flight is, some of the downfalls of the traditional training environment in getting it ingrained in students' minds. Let's talk about how we do practice this or get recurrent training in it and how to do it safely.
Well, first of all, we have to understand what the training objective in this or any maneuver is. And in this particular maneuver, slow flight, really, it's just to develop our own sense of feel of what slow flight is all about. We want to have our body actually send off alarms to us that we are indeed in slow flight. And we need to feel what the controls are doing or are not doing, how mushy things become, and what the warning signs are of flying too slow. As instrument pilots, we're told, of course, to trust our instruments. All pilots trust our instruments, but in the VFR environment, sometimes our attention's outside looking at the sights, as I said earlier, taking pictures, and our body is immune to what slow flight feels like. To an experienced pilot, who operates in this, at the slow flight envelope, at the edge of it, he or she will begin to know instinctively. I mean, I can do this, and I'm sure you can do this. You know when the airplane is just sort of hanging on its wings, and this is something that we need to understand. And that's our training objective, is to know what slow flight feels like and our ability to use our controls effectively to control it during the slow flight regime.
It looks like we also need to do it in a number of different configurations.
Yes, Paul, and that becomes what we call the training elements. We need to be able to do this both visually, looking out the window, and by reference to our instruments. I'll say to a student, now let's see if we can get this Cessna 172 to fly at a speed less than 40 knots. And they'll do it, and they'll get it down successfully to 55 knots, and the engine's just idling, and they're hanging up there, but it won't go any slower than 55 knots. And then I ask, why? What can we do, I say, to slow the airplane down? And, of course, then they move quickly, they should, into the use of the flaps and see what effect flaps have on flying slow, and then we can use our airspeed indicator to measure that. And then contrary to most practices, we fly slow, we practice slow in straight flight, straight and level flight. But we also need to practice slow flight in turns, in banks, and steep turns in slow flight and see what that does and experience firsthand how our stall speed increases as our bank angle increases. We need to learn how to do this with a change in altitudes, slow flight during descents. Slow flights during climbing, a slow flight in a climb. And then we need to change the configuration, as I mentioned earlier, put the gear down or put the flaps out while maintaining heading and altitude so that we understand at all phases of flight, whether it's an approach to landing where the airplane is dirtied up with flaps out, gear down, or it's in cruise configuration flying clean, and then we back the power off. It's a little bit like going to the gym, and an analogy I used in the article was, we send our airplane engines out for a tune-up every 500 or every 100 hours or so, or at least annually. We as pilots need to have the same kind of skills tune-up, and we get those tune-ups through specific practice in some of these air work exercises, beginning with, as an example, slow flight.
Well, if anybody listening, Bob, had no idea what they were going to tell the instructor they needed to focus on during their next flight review, maybe they've got some ideas now.
That would be good.
Bob, we appreciate your review of this. We'll refer our listeners to the November edition of Over the Airwaves, where this is explained in detail, and we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller has been my guest. Find the current edition of the newsletter at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.